The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Show. You know, comparing Eric Metaxas to any other radio show host is a lot like comparing apples and, oh, I don't know, oranges, perhaps?
Yes, that's it. Precisely, oranges.
Ripe, luscious, supple oranges dripping with sticky sweet juice.
Another day or two and they'll be rotten and inedible.
But today, oh, they're glorious and inviting.
Just like Eric.
And now, aren't you glad he's here?
Eric Metaxas. Hey, folks, it's Friday, I tell you. And you know how I know that, don't you? Because that's what they tell me. Albin, Chris, yes. You told me it's Friday.
I told you it's Friday.
To trust you. Fridays are always fun around here because we do Ask Metaxas or we do Fun Facts Friday. Albin, we're going to do Fun Facts Friday, are we not?
We are going to do a truncated version of Fun Facts Friday and Ask Metaxas. Both. You get a bonus today.
Ask Metaxas. I'm Metaxas.
Well, let's ask you something.
I don't have a lot of answers, but do you want to do that? Actually, yeah. Before we do that, let's remind people that while you are enjoying this free entertainment, we hope you will patronize our sponsors, honorboundcoffee.com, nummy. And man, that caffeine just bang wakes me up.
I love it.
And no, I really do. Honorboundcoffee.com. Tell them Eric sent you. They give all of their profits. Think of this. 100% of their profits go to helping military families. I don't know how can you add to that? That's amazing. And then, of course, Mike Lindell, MyPillow. I don't know if you've seen the ad that we did. We did a wacky ad. We're doing another ad. Chris Himes is the one really doing them. Chris, you're the one doing it. So
It's a lot of fun. We get to kind of flex our Madison Avenue muscles.
Exactly. So, if you go to Mike Lindell, you tell them that use the code Eric. I want to remind you that. And I want to remind you, Angel Tree folks, this is literally the last day. They'll probably keep it up through the weekend. But Angel Tree, this is a great cause. This is the last opportunity, folks, to help kids, to send kids to camp or to these kids, their parents are incarcerated. And we want to let them know that God loves them, that there are people out there who care about them. It's a beautiful organization and a glorious idea. Let me tell you, it's amazing. So I want to encourage you, go to metaxastalk.com or you can use our phone number. I'm going to give out the phone number, but if I give it out, you're going to have to use it.
Yeah.
888. That's 888. 888-206-2793. 888-206-2793. Call. Give anything you can give. We'll remind you about that later. But please, folks, please do that. Now, Albin, we pre-recorded some Ask Metaxas stuff for the rest of the show, but why don't we start now? We have more Ask Metaxas questions. We might as well get to as many as possible.
Oh,
Fun Facts Friday in hour two. Go ahead.
Okay. Fun fact. Could I read something? This is a great way to kick us off. There's a doctor, a Thomas Spethman in San Diego, California. He wrote a great letter. This will be a great way to get us into Ask Metaxas. He said a word of encouragement. He said he's 72 years old. He's a retired medical physician. He says, Eric, through your books and now the show and the YouTube videos, so make sure you sign up for our YouTube channel, by the way, you have been a profound blessing in my life. In short, I became a believer in high school and grew in my faith in college, and I've been married for 48 years. God has been faithful through it all. But he's brought suffering in my life 5 years ago in order to draw me closer to him. I have always felt confident and strong in my abilities, but God humbled me with a prolonged experience of debilitating anxiety. I learned to forgive totally my father and some other important parts of my healing. However, I still needed to get meds for a psychiatrist. 2.5 years ago, I read your book, Miracles. It convinced me that God was still doing miracles in the world today. 1 month after completing it, at 3 a.m. in the morning, the Holy Spirit gently woke me up and reminded me of the story of the girl who was saved from falling to her death on I-95. I personally remember that story, too. It's a great story. Holy Spirit confirmed that he had saved the lives of my son and 4 others from a car accident in Zambia in 2008 when they were starting a bike factory, Zam Bikes. He also gave me confidence to quickly and safely taper off all my meds in retirement. I work part-time at the Department of Defense during military entrance exams. By God's grace, I sometimes encourage these young people who are wondering if God still exists to read your book. Thank you for using your talents to honor the Lord. And that's Tom Spethman. Oh, wonderful letter. I just love
encouraging.
It.
And I tell you, all the stories in that Miracles book are true. Eva Meyer, my dear friend, Eva Meyer Nash, she's married now and lives in the Orlando area. I was just with her and her husband not that long ago. But, you know, that story is true. All the stories in the book are true, but that's to me one of the most amazing.
Yeah.
There's a couple of stories in there that Eva shared with me. I've had a number of friends. When I came to faith in 1988, seriously came to faith, I started hearing these miracle stories. And I just thought, how come I've never heard these in my life? People need to know this is real. God is not a philosophical system. Right. It's not a moral system. He is alive and he hears our prayers and he loves us. And so I wrote my Miracles book with the idea of sharing some of those stories. So thanks to that lovely gentleman. Yeah. What a sweet note. And it humbles me a lot when people say that things that I've written or said have blessed them. And I probably confuse people when I do my snarky humor. They kind of wonder, is this the same guy? And I've been having trouble with that lately. I don't know who I am. It's like the Bonhoeffer poem. Who am I? I don't know. I just know that by God's grace, I belong to him. But yeah. what a sweet note. My goodness.
Yeah. It really, really is exceptional. By the way, and I know people have prayed for me in the past because I was having some heart problems. By the way, I was able to see my doctor in person. Believe it or not, I really was. And she's my heart doctor. And she said, man, you've got the heart of a mule. And I said, no surprise there. I had that transplant done, you know, 5 years ago.
Incredible.
Yeah.
God bless that mule.
Thank you.
Okay. But
Miracle Mule.
But whose heart does the mule have? All right. So should we start out with an Ask Metaxas question?
Yes. Chris Himes, why don't you ask that first big question?
All right. This is from Kelly. What's going on with your Facebook account? I'm extremely worried about social media giants blocking conservative voices online. I'm amazed at the freedom given to liberal perspectives while conservative values are being restricted on social media. What gives? That was my ad.
I was going to say, she didn't write what gives.
She did not. No,
a person named Kelly never writes what gives. But you, Chris Himes, added that. And I think it's in keeping with the spirit of the letter. Well, yeah. I have to say, I have like 80,000 followers on my Facebook page, you know, the main page, the fan page, the public figure page. And like 3 weeks ago or something like that, they just stopped allowing me to post on the page. And it had something to do with they wanted to confirm where I live. And I thought, well, that's easy. And I did everything they asked like 20 times. Nothing worked. I'm still banned from the page. I don't understand it. We have some people working on it. But I just have to say that it is frightening that we have allowed ourselves to be controlled by social media. I mean, it's a bad scene, man. And we need to do something about it. And, you know, Twitter is no different. None of these platforms are very different. They're controlled by human beings who have more power probably than they ought to have. And it's a real problem. So I just want to say to people, it's why I'm on several platforms. So I'm on Instagram. I am on Facebook, as I said. We hope to get that cleared up soon. I'm on Twitter. But then most important of all, folks, if you're not signed up for my weekly newsletter, please. This is the only way I can get out information. You have to go to ericmetaxas.com. Sign up for the newsletter, ericmetaxas.com. That's it. When we come back, we're going to do more Ask Metaxas. And later on, we got Fun Facts Friday. It's a kooky, fun, happy Friday. Stick around.
Leave on with his war wound like a crown. It causes child Jesus.
Make like a Mr. Milquetoast, you'll get shut out.
Hey, folks, welcome back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. We're doing a special hour. We call it Ask Metaxas. Today, I'm playing the role of Metaxas, and you all get to ask me all the questions. I mean, ask me, excuse me, all the questions you like. Ask Metaxas starts now. Go.
Go, go. Cody from Colorado asks, how old are you? What's your favorite food? And do you golf?
Wow. Don't know. I don't know that I have a favorite food. I love a lot of food, but I don't know that I have a favorite food. And am I supposed to? Does everybody have a favorite food?
Yeah, mine's fischer zile and kumpir. It's a Slovenian dish.
I don't have a favorite food, but there's a lot of food that I love. So I'll skip that one. Do I golf? No. I have played golf, I think, three times. I've gone to driving ranges a couple of dozen times, but in last year's, there are a number of things in my life that I realize that in this lifetime, I'm not going to have time to get to. Being a major sports fan is one of those things. I don't have that time. Playing golf is another one of those things. I just realized that I'm not going to have the time to play that game very much unless, you know, my life changes. As far as how old I am, that is a matter of public record, and shame on you for asking a woman her age. Oh, but you know what? Since I'm not a woman, I guess you can ask me. Shoot. I was born on June 27th, 1963. Next question.
Okay.
Okay. Kurt is asking, some people have criticized your book, If You Can Keep It, for taking too rosy a view of some of the founders. Apparently, toward the end of his life, Franklin wrote a letter in which he expressed both doubt as to the divinity of Jesus and a rather limited pragmatic view of Jesus's teachings. How do you respond to that criticism?
Okay, first of all, I have to say, and I say this humbly and lovingly, but anyone who has criticized my books is a jerk.
Yeah.
You know what? I didn't mean that in the true sense of the word jerk. What I meant was people are free to criticize my books, but on Ask Metaxas, I guess I will have to defend them. All right. That is a good question. This kind of gets back to the question in the previous segment about marriage. And I think that it always is about context. I would state emphatically that I don't think I take too rosy a view of the founders or the founding at all. I think what I state emphatically, because it is true, is that every single one of the founders understood that virtue and faith were at the very center, without any question, of the kind of self-government and liberty they were giving us in the Constitution. There is no question about that, and there are no exceptions. Benjamin Franklin and Jefferson, while having what I would certainly consider unorthodox views theologically, doesn't make us force them to go outside the camp and be stoned. Their views on how virtue and faith interacted to give us the ability to be truly free, to have a kind of self-government that the world had never dreamt of really before the 18th century. I really think that, on that, there is no question that it's true. I think it has been understated. And I think that on the contrary, not only do I not have too rosy a view of the founders and of the founding, but I think most historians have had not enough rosy a view. Actually, that's putting it strangely, but have had a sour negative view. I think it's since the 1960s in particular, academics have made a speciality, so to speak, of finding the worms in the apple. They forget about the apple and they look for the dark thing that they can write a dissertation on or make a name for themselves. I think that, frankly, they've done a grand disservice to most of the population in that, and that they need to acknowledge what I write about so forcefully in my book, If You Can Keep It, that the founders, without any question, understood the value of Christianity. Most of them were, in fact, theologically orthodox Christians, but even those who were not, nonetheless, understood utterly and completely the value and centrality of Christian faith and the value of virtue in this thing that we call the American experiment. There's simply no doubt about that. And I think that the only thing that I misstate in my book, If You Can Keep It, is I slightly overstate religious liberty before 1776, because there were places in the 13 colonies where that didn't exist. Nonetheless, largely, I'm correct in stating that there was a tremendous amount of religious liberty already in existence before the founding of the United States. So that's my long answer. If you prefer the short answer, I can give that to you after class.
Okay. Kurt from Tucson asks, do you think it's possible that the wine Jesus miraculously created from water for the wedding in Cana of Galilee made its drinkers undrunk as they drank it? Perhaps a better way of putting it is sober-minded, as so termed several places in the Bible. The master of the feast became quite sober-minded after sampling the wine that was water, didn't he?
I think the answer to that is no. I do not think that that wine made them sober-minded. I think the whole point of the story, I shouldn't say the whole point of the story, but one of the points of the story is, in fact, that it was alcoholic wine. Now, we already know that the kind of wine drunk in antiquity was typically less alcoholically potent than the wine that we drink today. We know that the wine that they drank, for example, in classical Greece, if it was a Dionysian banquet, it would be a mixture of 3-to-1 with water. If it was an Apollinian banquet, it would have been mixed 5-to-1 with water so that they would be more sober-minded. But whatever the case, I think the point of the story is that when people get drunk, we serve them the cheap wine. And in that parable, in fact, Jesus says, we're going to serve the best wine last. There's a lot to that story, because Jesus, he was the last prophet. He was the best. We don't have prophets as we did in the Old Testament. God always serves the best last. God does everything upside down. The greatest leader is the servant of all. So anyway, the short answer to that question is no, but it was a great question.
Oh, it really was. Thank you, Kurt. Alex asks, where were you during 9/11? Are there any ways in which you it personally impacted you, or ways that you saw God work in the city?
Ways that it impacted me. People don't realize, but I had a 40% ownership in the World Trade Center, so I lost a lot of money. Just kidding. No, Suzanne and I and our then 2-year-old daughter were living here in New York City when it happened. It was one of the most horrifying moments of my life when I turned on the TV and realized what was happening. And I guess I was having breakfast with a friend, Emerson Egerich. He was here in the city. I've invited him on this program, and I've talked to him about his book, Love and Marriage. Dear friend, we had breakfast. It was a glorious day.
Yeah.
And I went back to my apartment, and it was early, and I had a voice message saying, hey, do you see what's going on at the World Trade Center? You should check it out. So I turned on the TV and saw planes circling the World Trade Center. Obviously, the two planes had already hit. But I remember watching on the TV live when one of the buildings collapsed. And I'll never forget it, because I spontaneously burst into tears in that second, knowing that thousands had just died and I had just witnessed it. It was harrowing. I feel that I was in a strange depression for weeks after that. It was just something that I can't even describe. And a lot of times when people have memorials, 9/11 memorials and stuff, and they want to talk about it, I don't want to. It's like, I don't even want to remember it because it was so painful. You could smell We're 4 miles north, or we were 4 miles north at the time of the actual site. And for a couple of days, you could smell this sickly sweet smoke coming through the windows, some of which was human remains that had been vaporized. I mean, it was a traumatic time. I don't know what more I can say about it right now, but I'll leave it at that.
Simon asks, Eric, can you please expand upon your interest in The Mysterious Island by Jules Verne? Why is it included in your list of recommended books? And the book has a satisfying spirit and industry and camaraderie, and I enjoy the connection to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Whoops, we're getting the wrap-up sign here from James.
We know we've got a whole minute left. Honestly, the Mysterious Island probably shouldn't be there because there are so many books that I think of as much as well of as I do The Mysterious Island. It's a great book just because I love Jules Verne. There's a whole bunch of Jules Verne's books that I want to put in there. That may be the one that I had read most recently when I was making up that list, but I think it's high time I put a new list on my website. Go to ericmetaxas.com. It's incumbent upon you, sir, madam, to go to ericmetaxas.com and check out all the free stuff that's there. You can get a free pack of cigarettes if you go there before midnight tonight. We'll be back for another segment. Christian best-selling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com. Hey there, folks. Welcome back. We are continuing what we like to call Ask Metaxas. You see, my last name is Metaxas, and we thought that if I'm answering questions and you're asking them, we could call it Ask Metaxas. Wasn't that clever, Albin?
That's great.
My co-host here, or you get to be asking the questions. So what else do we have?
Well, I've got my first question is, how do you like my flamingo shirt?
You know something? I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up because I don't like it.
You don't like the pink flamingo? Okay. Well, that's right.
Actually, no. It's actually really nice.
No, the truth is that Kmart was going out of business in Yorktown Heights. So Ann and I went in there. You could get like two shirts for $3. And if they really wanted to stick you, they'd give you five shirts. That's actually
the ones with no flamingos were really expensive.
Yeah. No, Dennis Miller had a joke like that one. Anyway, from Romney. Okay, here's Ask Metaxas from Romney, and there's no Romy. City. Romney, yeah, no city though. I am a homeschool mom and about to prepare my son for his sophomore year of U.S. history. I would like him to listen to audiobooks over the summer, so I was hoping, Eric, that you would suggest some. I want him to think critically, so I don't want to be particularly one-sided, but I don't want revisionist history either.
Well, that one is either a very difficult question or a very easy question, because the first thing that pops into my mind, of course, is my own book, If You Can Keep It, The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty. I wrote that almost exactly for what Romy is talking about here. I realized that high schoolers in particular, they're not getting the kind of information that they need to get. And I specifically wrote, if you can keep it, not to be one-sided. In other words, I've had people on the liberal side of the spectrum read it and praise it and love it. Because I think that I try not to be a polemicist. I try not to be a conservative. I try to be an American. What are the basics of what it means to be an American? And so I must say that I will recommend that audio book, because I think if you listen to that, it will help you decide where you'd want to go next. But I will also say that I read the audiobook. I'm proud of myself. It's a lot of work to read an audiobook. Boy, oh boy, it takes a long time. I also read my Martin Luther audiobook, which is very long, and I read every word of it because I think it's important sometimes for the author, particularly me as an author. I feel strongly about how things ought to be phrased, and I feel capable of doing that myself. So I took that on. But the If You Can Keep It book, honestly, I wish I could give it away free to every high schooler in the United States of America or every college student, because I really did try to be even-handed. It's not meant to be my version of things. It's meant to say, hey, what are the basics that we all used to agree on, but that most of us have forgotten? And if you don't know these basics, it's really hard to understand American history. So Romy, I would recommend that. Forgive me if it sounds self-serving, but honestly, that is why I wrote the book. So I'll leave it at that. Alvin, do we have other questions?
Oh, yeah. Here's one from Richard in Granite Bay, California. He says, I am fascinated to know how you chose your church in New York City. Was it just that it was a nearby option where you live, or did it have to do with Calvary St. George and its esteemed historical members like Arthur, Ascot, Simpson, and many more?
Well, it's so funny because we don't go to Calvary St. George's anymore. We haven't been going there for, it's got to be like 7 or 8 years, I think.
You were excommunicated, right?
Listen, first of all, there are many good churches in New York. Now, that was not the case, 20 years ago. There have been so many great churches that have popped up. When I first became a Christian in 1988, I attended an Episcopal church in Darien, Connecticut, and it was one of the most wonderful churches. It was an evangelical church. It was they believed in the gifts of the Spirit. It was St. Paul's Darien, one of the most wonderful churches I've ever had the privilege to attend. Terry Fulham was the rector, and I got such a grounding in the Bible and things there that I wish that church were still around, and I would love to go to it. There was nobody like Terry Fulham. He was the best of the best. But when I started going to church in New York City, I was attending Times Square Church, which is David Wilkerson started that. So we went there for a number of years. I met Suzanne at Times Square Church. And I guess after a number of years, we were going to Tim Keller's church in New York. But then some friends invited us to get involved at Calvary St. George's. Why? Because the rector there, my friend Tom Pike, he had been to visit the New Canaan Society up in Connecticut. And he thought, boy, I would love to get some of this energy in my church, because the church, as many Episcopal churches, had been mostly taken over by people who are theologically liberal, who don't really believe in the Bible or care much about it. They become kind of left-wing political activists. And he invited some of us, would we want to join the church? And so we joined in an effort really to renew the church. And we were, I would say, rather successful. So I went to Calvary St. George's for a long time, but it's downtown. And eventually Suzanne and I decided that we wanted to find a church closer to us, which is why we now attend Central Presbyterian on 64th and Park Avenue when we're in New York, when there's not a lockdown. We went to Calvary St. George's for a long time, and I still recommend it. It's a wonderful church. It's been renewed. But now we go to an evangelical Presbyterian church. There's much to say on that, but we are now out of time. We'll be back with one more segment of Ask Metaxas. That's me. Love will keep us together. Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Yes, yes. It's another segment of that wonderful show they call the Eric Metaxas Show. I think that's because I'm involved with it and I'm Eric Metaxas. Actually, we call this segment Ask Metaxas, where, Albin, you get to voice the questions sent into us. Lots of people email us. We read everything. So, Albin, some people have asked me some questions. We had Richard from Granite Bay, California, asked me a question. I think he even has a second question.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Here's the second. By the way, the church, you know how I picked my church here in Tarrytown?
No.
I
was walking how did you pick your church?
Well, I was walking down the street one day, and, you know, it was like, I guess it was a Saturday morning, and there was a guy standing outside with a collar or something. He said, "You, get in here." So now that's, I go.
That's a great way to pick your church.
That's the way you pick them.
Who's
the church
say?
Picks the church picked me. Church okay, picked so me. Richard from Granite Bay, California, also, he says, how did you choose your how do you choose your topics for biographies? You got Luther, you got Wilberforce, you got Bonhoeffer. Seem almost at random. Do you have others in the works?
Well, first of all, that's an opportunity for me to plug my current book, Seven More Men. It's kind of funny that you pulled it out because you and I were thinking the same thing. Well, I'll answer the question, but I will say that there's so many wonderful people about whom I don't have the time to write an entire book. So that's why I wrote Seven Men. That's why I wrote Seven Women. That's why I've written Seven More Men, and why we are now working on Seven More Women, because there are many, many stories that are just worth telling and worth knowing. And I think if somebody can just read a chapter, they can get to know the story. But how I came to write my full-length biographies, well, I'll tell you, I had never written a biography in my life, and I had no desire to write a biography. I was sure that I would never write a biography in my life. I'm not making that up. There's no hyperbole. I never dreamt I would write a biography. I had no interest in it. Well, there was a movie coming out called Amazing Grace about the life of William Wilberforce. And somebody had the bright idea that, hey, why don't we get someone to write a new biography of Wilberforce to come out with the movie? It's the bicentennial of the 1807 abolition of the slave trade. It's an amazing date in history. So we're coming out with a movie. Why not somebody coming out with a book to come out with the movie? Hey, who might want to do that? Who can we get to do that real cheap? What about Eric Metaxas? I hear he's desperate for cash. So they contacted me. And it was actually Mickey Maudlin. He was my editor on that book. He thought that I might be the right person to write it. So I have to thank Mickey Maudlin. He's with Harper One in San Francisco. It's because of Mickey that I have been doing this with my career. And I don't know if I've ever thanked him publicly on this radio program, but it is because of Mickey Maudlin that I decided to do this. He contacted me and said, how would you like to write a biography of William Wilberforce? And I thought, well, I know about Wilberforce. I've heard about him through Chuck Colson and through Oz Guinness, who are my friends. And I know a little bit about him, but write a biography? I don't know. Am I up to that? Could I pull it off? So I prayed about it, and I'm not kidding. And this will be in one of my next books. The Lord spoke to me in a vision. That has happened to me a handful of times in my life. Very rare, very dramatic for me, because it just doesn't happen except maybe every 10 years or something like that. And without going into it, I knew as a result of my conversation with Mickey, and then after praying about it and this vision, I said, there's just no doubt about it. I had already sort of decided to do it, but the vision confirmed it to me. And it was dramatic. It was really miraculous. And so I leapt in and I wrote the book, and I thought that it was very interesting. I thought maybe I'll write another biography, but the only person who rose to the level of Wilberforce in my mind was Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And so I proposed that was able to publish that with Thomas Nelson. But I really never thought I'd write a biography, but it's because of Mickey Maudlin suggesting it to me. And, you know, I was a writer thinking, you know, what can I do next? When he suggested it to me, I thought, hey, maybe that's God. Well, guess what? It turns out it was God. So
yeah.
I wrote that book. It got, it was briefly on the New York Times bestseller list. People praised it and loved it. And I really thought this is a good genre for me. So it's what led me to write my Bonhoeffer book. And of course that book.
Yeah. How'd that work out life. For you? Yeah.
It changed my life. It sold over a million copies and enabled us to get out of debtor's prison. And actually, you know, I was pretty sure I would never write another biography.
Yeah.
But my friends, Greg Thornberry and Marcus Spieker in Germany, the two of them convinced me that I should write a book on Martin Luther. It was Marcus Spieker in Germany. He lives in Leipzig now. He said to me, like, I don't know what year it was, but it was like 2012 or something like that. He said, you know, in 2017 is the 500th anniversary of Luther. You should write a book about Luther. And that's what got me thinking, you know, no, I don't really want to do it, but it got me thinking. And eventually he and Greg Thornberry convinced me of the impact Luther had on history. And once I understood that and realized there's a 500th anniversary coming up, I thought maybe it does make sense. Yeah. And in some ways I'm more proud of that book than any other, the Luther book, because I think it enabled me to tell the story of somebody, warts and all, because he was a figure who was not, he was not like a Wilberforce or a Bonhoeffer who are, you know, sort of saintly figures. He had some issues, but he was nonetheless used by God very dramatically. And so because I wrote Martin Luther and I said I never would write another biography, I have to say maybe I will write another biography, but it has to rise to the level of those three figures, which is not easy. You know, now, I'm not about to write.
You told me once that when you were in debtor's prison, you actually met Bob Cratchit. Is that true?
No. I met Little Dorrit and her father because they were in debtor's prison.
Oh,
and this is in the mid 19th century, so a lot of people find it hard to believe. And yeah. You know, also it's not even true. But Little Dorrit.
Alvin, memories fade. Dorrit,
if anybody's looking for something to watch, since we're going to another break here, we got another segment coming up, a 5-minute segment. But I just got to say, Suzanne and I have been catching up on some of the greatest miniseries. If you go to streaming, go to Hulu or Amazon Prime, they have Little Dorrit, which is one of the best, maybe the best miniseries I've ever seen, an historical miniseries. I think it's 8 parts or something. It's superb, starring Claire Foy as Little Dorrit. It is absolutely spectacular. In any event, we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back. Final segment of Ask Metaxas. Folks, welcome back. Final segment of Ask Metaxas. Alvin, do we have we've got more questions, don't we?
Oh, I got a whopping good one from Jane from Austin, Texas. Oh boy. You ready?
I'm ready.
She says, love your show. Okay, that's a good start. I've especially enjoyed hearing from the charismatic/Pentecostal healers that you've brought on the show, who have opened my mind to spiritual healing, prophecy, and other spiritual gifts. How do they interpret Matthew 7:21-23? Is there a modern day example of someone who might fit this description? Can demons or unbelievers cast out demons or perform healings? So that's what the scripture is about.
That's easy. The answer is absolutely yes.
Yes. Listen,
if you go to a witch doctor, okay, and you say, I got this problem, that witch doctor is not going to Jesus. That witch doctor is going to a more powerful demon to cast out whatever demon you've got in you. That's the history of religion. Unless you go up to Jesus, you're going to have to work within the system. And that means you are appealing to demons to cast out other demons. So every witch doctor, every shaman, every sorcerer, all of that stuff is real, but it's kind of like going to the mafia to borrow money. Do you really want money from a source like the mafia? Don't you think it might be better not to go to them, because they're more powerful and they can get you what you want now? But guess what? Now you're in their debt. You want to be in their debt? I don't think so. That's what happens when you deal with anybody who is not appealing to the God of the Bible. If they're appealing to any anybody else. Sometimes they say they're appealing to a saint when it's really like in Santeria, they're really appealing to other demons. You have to be very careful, because if you are not doing healing or casting out demons in the name of Jesus, then what is really going on is exactly what that scripture in Matthew says, that there are going to be people doing things, and they are doing it with the authority of other demonic powers. And let's face it, that's just something that it's going on right now while we're having this conversation. There are people going to fortune tellers, and they're going to shamans and witch doctors and you name it, and they're saying, help me. And sometimes those witch doctors and shamans and whoever it is, psychics, they really want to help and they think they're doing good. But what they're doing is they're appealing to another demonic power. And it's really dark stuff. And people need to know that that world is real. And it's one of the reasons that I am unapologetic about my Christian faith. There are a lot of people that are trapped in dark stuff. They're dealing with ghosts and demons and they don't know what to do. And I'm here to tell you, there is an answer. Jesus is the answer. You've got to find someone who understands that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I didn't read the scripture, but it's Matthew 7, 21 to 23. If people want to look that up, that's basically, it deals with that. Like if you say, in my name, he might say.
Jesus is saying, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons and in your name perform many miracles? There are many people driving out demons with other demons. There are many people performing miracles with demonic power.
Right.
That's why we do need to be very, very careful. What we need to do is be biblical and go to people who are being biblical in the way they do things. Otherwise, run away from them. I think we're out of time. Alvin,
yeah. Well, can I just suggest that people go to Angel Tree on our website and donate for this weekend? Give something, anything, get entered into our contest to win a giant grand prize. Okay, and you could also call the phone number, 888-206-2793. That's the MyPillow jingle, but it's
I loved it, 888-206-2793. You know, that's very catchy. Yeah. I'd like people to call that number. Folks, we need your help desperately. I'm really being clear about that because it's true. 888-206-2793. Please call, give anything you can, or just go to metaxastalk.com. God bless you. Thank you.